Welcome to Mile High Hockey Podcast.
You're in the right place if you want to talk about Colorado Avalanche hockey, because that's what we do here. I am your new host, Ezra Parter, in for Adrian Hernandez, who has decided that he'd rather be a producer and sometimes on-air talent. Very, very gracious of him to pass the torch over to me. I'm excited to do this. And I'm joined, of course, by Evan Liu, Jacob Wendling, and Jackie Kay. Everybody say hi.
Greetings.
Hello, hello.
And just for the listening audience, a better way to introduce you would have been for you to say who you are so they can hear whose voice is whose. Evan, I'll start with you.
Oh, well, it's okay. Well, this is Evan, obviously. Hello, everybody.
And
I'm Jacob.
And Jackie.
And it's me, Jackie.
Awesome. Thanks, y'all. I'll clean that up next time. if you are... Thank you. If you are watching this on YouTube, good job. You should watch it live. It really helps us the most. If you're listening to it as a podcast, also good job. But check out our YouTube channel. We do this live on Fridays at 3:30 Mountain, or we put it out as a podcast. Both ways to listen are great. But if you do listen to that YouTube one, then you can chime in, ask us questions, etc. So take a look at that if you want to. Today we are talking about a rough week for the Avalanche, but also we're looking ahead to the Avalanche game against Edmonton tomorrow. And we are hoping to be joined by Jeff Chapman, the editor of SB Nation's Copper and Blue Edmonton Oilers podcast, blog. Maybe they have a podcast. I don't know. We'll ask him. We'll find out. he is potentially unavailable, so we are hoping to be joined by him. But if not, then we'll just keep talking about last night, which I imagine a lot of you listening or watching are hoping to talk about, because everybody's got strong opinions on what happened last night. But before we get into that, we put out a poll on our Twitter asking folks which of our injured players' absences is most negatively affecting Colorado's success. And the options on the poll were Gabe Landeskog, Val Nichushkin, Bowen Byram, and Josh Manson. Before we get into the results of the poll, I'm curious to hear what our writers think. Jackie, who would you have voted for if you voted? Or if you did vote, who did you vote for?
I did vote, and it was for Byram.
For Byram.
So I was one of the few, but I don't disagree with Landy winning this poll. Mm-hmm. I think the leadership quality that he brings is just something you can't really quantify and you can't replace. But I wanted to make a case for Byram, just that they need some help on the back end, and I think Englund and even Hunt have done well enough, but they need to get back to generating the offense that they need to. And with Byram coming back, whenever that happens, I think we'll kind of lift all boats in that regard. And so I think when he's back, it will make a big difference.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I definitely agree with both the points you made about Gabe and about Bowen. Jacob, what'd you say?
Man, I agree with Jackie that Byram deserves some shine, and you know, Landeskog is the one that you'd vote for. Obviously, he's the best player. He's the leader, and so you know they're missing their leader. That is very, very clear. This is kind of a rudderless team right now, and so you know the answer is Landeskog. But in the interest of being a contrarian, I'll add Manson to that list, because you know EJ and Gerard are really struggling right now on the second defensive pairing, and you know Manson and Byram, getting those two back, I think are bigger than getting Landeskog back, just because you know, like Jackie said, it slots everybody back down into roles they're more suited for. That you know Gerard and EJ are just playing a little bit too much right now. You saw, you know, previewing the game last night, they fell asleep at the back door. And so, you know, really, they just need another, you know, somebody who can start offense from the back end and also lock down defense on, you know, on the back end as well. And so that's Byram and Manson.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Evan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the obvious answer here is Landeskog. He is the leader of this team. He's the heart of this team. He is the person that is going to make an impact both on and off the ice. With that being said, I will play devil's advocate here a little bit, because obviously Landeskog is by far the winner of this poll, and everyone's mentioned him, so on and so forth. So I'll play devil's advocate and talk about the third name on this poll, Valeri Nichushkin. Nichushkin, you know, he's obviously started really hot. His new deal, you know, really got him going. He was doing really well before he injured his ankle again and then went on to re-injure it, which is unfortunate to say the least. So yeah, you know, he had 16 points in 15 games. You know, that's just something that is, you're going to miss in the depth of this team, and just something that players like Martin Kaut and Curtis McDermid and company, just, they can't replicate that. There is no replicating that. So, and same with Landeskog too, like he had 59 points in 61 games. It's ridiculous. It's, you know, the amount of point production that you lose from those two guys, but Nichushkin in particular, because of the way he started this year, mm-hmm. is just real unfortunate. So
I believe when they had that little surge in December right before the break, they had Nichushkin for most of that, right? I just feel like, so I know Georgiev played really well during that stretch too, but it just, it does seem like this team wins when they have Nichushkin in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about the defensive difficulties they've been having with Hunt and Englund, but Bednar, after the loss in LA, was saying that some of the goals against that seemed like they were on Gerard and Johnson were actually the fault of forwards not tracking back and forcing specific action from the opposing forwards through the neutral zone, forcing them to the outside in the neutral zone and giving the defense a better chance. And that's something that Nichushkin and Landeskog excel at. So I think, honestly, it's like, I'll take any one of these four back at this point, because all of them will help make the defense better. And that's what exactly we need. But bottom line, the fans are right. 74% of them picked Gabe Landeskog. And how do you argue with that result? If things started happening like they did last night on the bench and Gabe's there, I think he's able to simmer folks down a little bit and get things back on track.
I have a wacky suggestion then, because McDermott played four shifts, not even 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. At this point, and you mentioned, even if they just had Landeskog on the bench and his leadership, this is an unrealistic situation, because I don't think it's ever happened, but why not just put him on the bench, dress him? Like, he's not going to play, but he's there. And
player coach.
And him being there is going to be more worthwhile than whatever they think McDermott's bringing as far as leadership and team camaraderie or whatever it is. So, like, at this point, I think they need to think outside the box for solutions.
I was going to say, I noticed you put that in the post-game recap and I chuckled. It was like, all right, that's a solid dig. Like, who knows, right? But, you know, also I know that Jared Bednar would probably not do that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, I mean, I think his systems are unique, and he's bringing something different than a lot of other coaches maybe would, but that seems pretty far outside the box for any NHL coach. The NHL is just not the most creative league, you know. Everybody's doing,
it really is.
Everybody's copycatting the last champion, which unfortunately we can't do because that was us. Well, so I guess let's dive into Landeskog a bit more. Is anybody worried about Landy missing the whole season?
No. I mean, it's already been said to by Bednar that he won't miss the entire season, which I trust. I hope that that's the case. And, you know, I believe that that is not going to happen. Yes, while his timeliness of returning is not, it keeps getting pushed back further and further. I don't think that this is something that is going to continue on for the rest of the season. I mean, if best things considered, like if it all works out, it will be like the 2021 or no, sorry, it'll be like the 2021 Tampa Bay Lightning. Stamkos goes on a Stamkos, Kucherov, I forget which one of them it was, goes on LTIR for the entire year, and then they make their way into the playoffs just about, and then, you know, both of them are back in time. That's kind of the hope. That's kind of the hope here too, if Landeskog can't go for the regular season, but I don't think that that's the case at all, unless something drastic happens in his recovery.
Yeah, that was Kucherov, and then Stamkos was out for a bunch of time that year as well. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of similar to what we're seeing with Landeskog and Val as far as forwards go, but yeah, he's not actually on LTIR. Well, I think we're going to do a live poll now. of our anybody listening, anybody on Twitter who sees this poll, should the Avalanche, if Landeskog's not coming back, if things are getting worse, should the Avalanche be tanking for Connor Bedard after what we saw from him at the World Junior Championships? That's the question. We're putting it out on Twitter. Please respond to it. We'll get to our live poll results in a bit. But I want to ask you guys what you think of that. Jacob, we'll start with you. Did you watch the World Junior Championships? Are you excited for Bedard? Should we tank for him if things aren't going well?
I mean, it would be a pretty hard tank job. At this point, they'd probably have to commit to not winning a single game the rest of the year the way that the...
Well, they don't have to get the best possible odds. They just have to get into the lottery.
Right, but it's what? It's a bottom three to get the top pick, is it? Or is the bottom five? Because I know they put limits on how much you can move up in the lottery.
I think it's 10 spots. Okay. I think you have to be bottom 10.
Yeah.
So I guess that bottom 10 is doable. I was thinking it might be like bottom five. So yeah, I mean, you know, you never know. If this next week, you know, they get another rash of catastrophic injuries, then yeah, start selling off parts, you know, let's create some content here.
We need the opposite of 2017. We need Makar. We need our bad luck when we've drafted Makar fourth, but we need the good luck for this one in this parody instance to be like the ninth worst team in the league, but then have get first in the draft lottery somehow. But
man, can you imagine the noise if that happened?
Oh gosh. Yeah, the league would lose their mind.
Just to chime in real quick, to determine the NHL draft order according to Tankathon, all teams missing the playoffs are in the lottery. Teams with the least points get more chances to win the lottery. The first overall pick is awarded by drawing ping pong balls, yada, yada, yada. It says right now the Chicago Blackhawks have a 25.5% chance to secure that first overall pick. The Avs aren't even on the list of what looks like the top 15, I want to say.
It could have been made before last night, too.
It could have, yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, now that you bring that up, though, Adrian, if Chicago does end up winning the draft lottery, we're going to be playing Bedard 3-4 times a year.
Oh, he's coming out west. It's just like
real interesting.
Yeah.
The top five teams with a chance at him, I think, are all Western Conference right now. He's
Columbus. Columbus is really bad.
Oh, Columbus is east. That's right. That's right.
If he comes out west, I would rather it be somewhere in the Pacific, like Anaheim or San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to face him in Arizona.
Zegers Bedard would be fun. With McTavish kicking around there too. Anaheim would be fun.
Top six are Chicago, Columbus, Anaheim, San Jose, and Arizona.
Mm-hmm. So yeah,
he's definitely going to try to push him to Chicago. Might get a frozen envelope situation there.
Montreal is six too.
I could also see that. Yeah. I don't know. I think we should stress that this is like parody. We're not saying we should do this immediately right now, unless I'm wrong and someone else on this panel really thinks that.
No, I mean, I pitched this definitely as a joke, but I do think that like if there's a season to have a down year and miss the playoffs, it's one where you have a shot at Connor Bedard, right? Jackie, yeah, what do you think?
Okay. Well, I want to go back to Landy really quick.
Sure.
I wouldn't like at this point. There is a lot of season left. We haven't even hit the halfway mark, but my concern with him is that this keeps dragging on and on and on. He's now had a second surgery. It's been almost a year. Bednar said that the first timeline's out the window and now he's on the second timeline, which I don't know why they couldn't just share that with us, because that actually sounds better than just like, oh, we have absolutely no idea when he'll be back. So at least there is another timeline, but honestly, I'm concerned for his career. And I know that sounds dramatic, but he's not the youngest player. And if this surgery doesn't fix it, he's dealt with this knee injury for almost a year at this point. Like, what needs to happen for him to feel good enough to be able to play? And I think that's a huge concern.
Yeah, as I say, he's had knee injuries like throughout his career, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Like, yeah. And you know, he plays a heavy style that lends himself to those injuries. And so like that, you know, kind of compounds how scary it is that like even if he does come back and heal, you know, can he play the same heavy game? You know, this is always kind of the question that you ask with players like this, and why contract negotiations are so contentious with, you know, with players like this going into your 30s is, you know, if you throw your body around, how long is your body going to hold up?
Yeah, and this was the conversation around the time of his resigning, whether it was worth it to invest in a guy who's going to age probably poorly. And he ended up getting an 8-year contract, which I think, I mean, we were all in theory happy to have him back, but also it's a big concern. If he does break down, I mean, there's a lot of bigger guys who play a bigger game like him who have broken down in the past, with like even guys like Michael Ferland, who was good for like 2 years and they're like, oh yeah, he's going to be great. And immediately on the shelf. Plenty of other players come that should come to mind before him, but he was first for me.
I was going to say that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he's top of my list of power forwards. I guess Dustin Penner would be a good example too from back in the day. There's plenty.
Peter Forsberg is a great example of a guy who's kind of, you know, dealt with this exact situation throughout his career, except it was his feet.
Excellent point. Yeah, and we've got Val dealing with multiple ankle injuries now too. So two big guys signed for big contracts who it's not unreasonable to be concerned about their long-term outlook. But before we doom and gloom about that, let's give them a chance to come back this season and prove us wrong, you know?
No, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, you mentioned Peter Forsberg going through the similar thing, but with his feet. I wonder if Landeskog has talked with Forsberg just to kind of get some advice maybe, or because, you know, there's obviously that connection there, right? They're Swedish and they both play for the Avs, you know, things like that, you know. You have to think maybe that he's talked to him about it and like tried to get some advice and try and see, you know, what can he do to, you know, maybe heal quicker, or, you know, even just be able to help his team, you know, when he's not on the ice. So, you know, it's probably something that I'd be interested in wondering if it's happened or not. I would hope so, but you never know.
I mean, he's got the right guy around to put him in touch with Forsberg and Joe Sakic. So you'd think it's definitely possible, definitely on the table.
And I didn't answer the Bedard part of your original question. It would be fantastic to get him, but regardless if the Avs are technically in the lottery or not, it's probably pretty unrealistic. They'd have to win with like 1% odds or something. But I think one thing to keep in mind is that, well, the focus is so much on Bedard, and he did have an incredible World Juniors. He's just such a talent. This is going to be a really great draft class. Like, it's shaping up where it could possibly be similar to the 2015 draft class, where obviously the Avs got Mikko at number 10. So they don't even need to win the lottery and get Bedard. They could potentially get a really good talent even around 10 or something, which I think that's maybe more realistic conversation, is that should the Avs try to sell a guy like Erod, maybe Comfort, expiring contracts, get more assets, and then accept maybe a 10 to 15 overall pick and get a really good talent on the team. But it'd be so hard just to ask this team to pull the plug, and they don't really seem to care about asset management as much. But I think that is something they should think about, because they let a lot of guys walk over last summer. They let Burakovsky, Kadri. They can't just keep doing that, right? Like, you have to get serious about getting assets at some point. So with a season that's maybe not looking as special, I think you got to think about it. Like, I don't want them to give up. I don't think anybody does. The players are never going to give up, and especially their champions. But I think at some point you have to try to fortify your future rather than just think like this is the only year that they could win again.
Yeah.
I mean, they've played this, you know, discussion into reality. Like, you know, as much as the, you know, the poll is a troll and a joke, you know, if you look at the standings, they're closer to the bottom five than they are to the top five right now. So, like, it's not that, you know, crazy of a notion to be talking about this right now, that, you know, you have Montreal is, you know, the sixth worst team in the NHL. The Avs are 8 points ahead of them. You know, that's another bet. That's another week like this. And, you know, Montreal could catch them. So, like, yeah, this is kind of a tongue in cheek discussion, but there is a little validity to this given how they have played as of late.
Yeah. And I mean, last week we were talking about how, on last week's podcast, I should say, we were talking about how we're not really worried. Right. Like, there's no reason to actually be worried. And I think that still holds true. But they did have a terrible week losing, you know, and it is kind of amazing how much one bad week of a couple losses can swing the discussion this dramatically. But also, they haven't looked good doing it. So there's definitely a reason for it.
Yeah, I was going to say that it was been a rough week. I don't know if I'm gonna say devil's advocate for this, but I'm gonna push back on that a little bit. I'm a little more worried, I think, maybe than others. Yeah, you can go look at my article that I wrote this morning. that was written in a panic last night at midnight after the game had ended. So, you know, that's just the youngster in me. But in all seriousness, like, I think there's definitely more things to be worried about in terms of like the depth and the, you know, you're not getting the points that you need. You're not getting the replacements that you need. Your injuries continue to you know, rise up. Dennis Mulligan's now out with an upper body injury. We don't know how long that's for. I don't even know how much he played last night, because I remember seeing on Twitter that he played one shift and then he played 4 seconds and then went off the ice and down the tunnel. So, you know, and Mulligan's only been here for what, 2-3 weeks, something like that. Not long at all in the injury.
He's really fitting into the culture though, getting injured.
What better way to learn the Avalanche way?
Oh my goodness. it sucks to laugh at it, but it's true, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah,
I wasn't here for the discussion last week, which is good, by the way. And it is true, like in questions like this, recency bias definitely colors your perspective on it. They win a couple games, you definitely feel a little bit better, but I think at this point you got to start looking at the standings. I mentioned a few podcasts back, I think them making the playoffs really comes down to staying ahead of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And right now they're tied, and they do have a few games in hand on St. Louis, but they have the same number of points. And Nashville's, I think they're only 1 point behind as well. I'm really not that worried about Nashville. I don't think they're very good, but the reality is you have to stay ahead of these teams if you want to, I guess, not worry as much. Because it's so hard to climb over teams. It's not so much about points. It's about how many teams you have to pass, because they're going to win as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think, to me, that's the bigger concern. It's not necessarily the 5-game in a row losing, because we know they're going to win again. Knock on wood. But we know they are.
They better win again.
It's just they really can't afford to fall further back, I guess, is my point. Like, it's not so much about the wins and the points, but it's about the teams, and they can't fall behind St. Louis.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off your point, Jackie, if you look at, you know, the Pacific standings, I think the two teams that are also kind of complicating things for the Avs right now are the Kings and the Kraken, because, you know, they're in the spots that basically everybody had reserved for the Flames and the Oilers. And so now, you know, as long as the Kings and the Kraken are setting the pace in the Pacific, the Avs are in the wild card chase with, you know, not just the Blues, but the Oilers and Flames as well.
Yeah, that makes the competition real fierce. And that's also what makes, you know, Saturday's game against the Oilers that much more important. And, you know, man, the Pacific is just a wild, wild mess. I mean, who had Seattle in, are they in third? I think they're in third right now. Who had Seattle in third place in the Pacific? And
they, by the way, they have the most 5-on-5 goals in the league.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're a threat. It's gonna be real interesting to see how it goes. But also to kind of piggyback off of the standings and the points and whatnot, the Avs they're only, at least at the time of this recording, because I know that Calgary plays tonight, Friday night. They are 2 points behind Calgary for the final wild card spot. But the thing I'm at least a little more worried about is that they're 5 points behind the Wild for third in the Central. That's where I'm a little more like, that's where I'm more concerned of, you know, it might not end up being a Central Division, you know, rivalry that will end up along. Yeah. And so it's going to be real interesting. And of course the Blues are also 5 points behind as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I feel like I'm watching the 2017-18 and 2018-19 Avs again, where they're on the up and up, and they're just trying to get a wild card spot and be in the show. So
it really does feel like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it makes sense too, because those teams 3 years ago were lacking depth, top heavy. Mm-hmm. And our depth is all on the shelf right now. So
I was gonna say, those are one line teams too.
Exactly. And they're, and they similarly had a tough time dealing with adversity, which you would think after a championship would have gone away, but with so many players out, it's just, I mean, I can't imagine being in that locker room and seeing everything go wrong and staying even keeled. You know, like I wouldn't say I was the calmest player when I was a player, but I was a captain on most of my teams, not like the captain, but a captain. And I was in a position where I had to try to be the level headed one. But as soon as things started compounding, like a couple bad calls in a row, a couple mistakes by, I don't know, I guess I'm not going to blame any of my teammates. They're all, nobody's listening here, but like a couple things go bad in a row and it's like, oh my God, we're done for. And I would try to stay level headed, but I can't, they're professionals. They should be able to do that, but also they're extremely passionate people. And I can only imagine they're feeling similarly to how I felt when a ref made a bad call, Andrew Cogliano. It's brutal when things keep compounding. I guess what I'm trying to get to, the reason I said all that was because I'm curious what you guys think. Do you think that with all of the injuries mounting, is each new thing kind of like the last straw on breaking some of these guys' spirits, or do you think that? I don't know. What do you think of that, Jacob? We'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think last night was like you could see the cracks really starting to form. You know, that just awful stretch where, you know, Cogliano tries to clear it, it hits the ref, and then they, you know, Vancouver scores. Cogliano gets 10-minute misconduct for yelling at the ref after that, and the Avs give up two goals. You know, Georgiev slams his stick over the crossbar, mm-hmm. as you know the you could, and you could just see that stretch, however long that was, 5 minutes or so. That really seemed to really kind of break their spirit last night. Like you could see that they had to, you know, rah-rah each other on the bench and trying to get back into the game. And like, I really think that for this losing streak, you know, Georgiev slamming his stick over the crossbar, that's kind of the image of where the Avs are as a team right now.
Yeah. That really sends a message. I feel like that you don't see Georgiev with that much passion. We've seen it when he, in the positives, when you beat the New York Rangers, your old team, in a shootout at Madison Square Garden, this is very much the opposite of that. And I think that just kind of sends the message of like, you know, this is not where we want to be. This is not where any of us want to be. And, you know, on that goal, when that happened, that third goal, I believe it was in like 2.5 minutes when they gave up those three goals or something ridiculous like that. 2:33. So like, you know, Kale knew it too right away. That's why after Georgiev was slamming his stick on the crossbar, that he's going to talk to him, because he knows that is not something he needs to do. Devon Toews knows it's something that shouldn't be done. That's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to relay that message to Georgiev in the heat of the moment, you know, that is something that you need right now. You need someone to lead you and calm you down and do all those things. With that being said, you don't have your usual captain there to help you with Landeskog. And so to kind of go full circle on this, yeah, you kind of need him to be here. And, you know, his return is just going to be that much more important to this team.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, let's talk about Toews real quick, actually, because I saw a lot of frustrated fans online talking about his lackadaisical skating back on that icing call, and then the hooking penalty that he took, and then obviously the turnover that led to that third goal. People were frustrated about. He just kind of flipped a puck trying to get it through the middle of the ice to Logan O'Connor, but instead it hit off a skate and went to the Oilers player who scored. What did you guys think of the icing and the hooking specifically? Jackie, I'll start with you. Did you see that play? What did you think of that?
I never saw a good replay of it, so I can't go in like too much detail about it, but I definitely saw the, you know, the goal against. It's tough, and it makes you wonder about mental fatigue, and maybe that's something we'll get into at the end here. Mm-hmm. I know he also just had a baby, so not to really give a guy excuses, but that good could one. Also lead to some mental fatigue, I guess.
Hey, nonetheless, congratulations to him at least.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Good call. Okay. Well,
so I guess that's my take on it. I mean, he usually is not a lazy player. And so I do think he gets a lot of pass though. I think a lot of the other defensemen get a lot more heat for their mistakes, and I think sometimes his get glossed over a little bit. So I think he should kind of wear what happened last night, but we also know that he is a much higher quality player than that. So it's just kind of, it's kind of where the team is at right now.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. Jacob, did you see the play as well? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, Taze, like Jackie says, he doesn't get, you know, enough flack for kind of when he does screw up. I like to half joke that he's like the best defenseman in the league who, you know, who makes some of the most confounding turnovers you've seen all year. And so, it's kind of frustrating that, like, you see how great he is so consistently defensively, and then he makes a couple of boneheaded plays like that, and you're just like, it's just confounding. How is a player that good able to do something that bad?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Evan, any final thoughts on that play?
Yeah, I'll just kind of echo everything that people have been saying in here. It's something that, you know, he's obviously a very good, talented defender, and the mental fatigue is there. It's setting in. When you're playing so many minutes like you are right now and things aren't going your way, it's unfortunate, and it's just, you know, kind of the way that things go. And so, you know, on that play specifically, you know, I think you just have to give more effort to that, but that also comes with more fatigue, and when you're more fatigued, it's harder to do those things. So it's just kind of like a snowball effect. So you know, it is what it is. We move on from it. I know Taze is going to move on from it too.
Yeah, I think that's all right. I definitely agree that icing, he could have skated back a little bit harder on that icing, got the call. It could have also been called. I'm not gonna back away from that. I think what he did enough to put himself ahead of the Oilers player to win that race, but it didn't get called because he didn't seem like he was skating hard enough. And then I gotta say it, the hooking call was ridiculous. He didn't do anything. But look, we don't have time to get into all of that because we have our guest here. We have Jeff Chapman here from the Oilers, the Oilers blog, Copper and Blue. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you all for having me. I really, really appreciate you bringing me on in, and look forward to hearing what y'all have to say.
Well, great. We look forward to hearing what you have to say. Obviously, we are playing, the four of us are playing against you tomorrow night. the matchup tomorrow night, it's an exciting one. The Oilers and the Avs are obviously both pushing for the playoffs, as we've been talking about a little bit today. And both are a little bit top heavy and lack a little bit of depth. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. We all prepared a few questions for you. Evan, I'll let you go first.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think my question kind of surrounds what has happened in the offseason with the Oilers. Jack Campbell came in and he has been far below expectations. And I was actually writing our preview article for tomorrow morning and was trying to figure out, well, if Campbell's not the number one, who is the number one? And it's Stuart Skinner. I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about Stuart Skinner. So if you could just talk about, you know, who is Stuart Skinner and how has he performed, and, you know, how does he complement, you know, what has so far been a disappointing campaign for Jack Campbell?
Well, that's an understatement and a half. I like to, Ken Holland is a guy who I've given a fair bit of grief for, especially the first, geez, I guess it's been 3 years since he's taken the helm in Edmonton. And, you know, you've seen his goaltending and what it's looked like. It's been Mike Smith and, you know, Mikko Koskinen was there when he came in. And I don't think Mike Smith was his first choice, but you see that you got kind of a mixed bag there. He went out and he spent some money and he got Jack Campbell. And, I give him credit for, you know, striking where he thought was there'd be gold there in them hills. But it's been a very disappointing campaign so far for Jack Campbell. He's got a sub 900 save percentage, and that definitely goes against everything that every Oiler fan and Ken Holland would have expected coming into 2022-2023. I think last I looked, it was sub 880. Now, to Campbell's credit, he had a pretty good game last night, and the Oilers did in their win over the Islanders, so thumbs up there. But it's been really, really bad. And Skinner has been almost everything we would have hoped Jack Campbell to have been. And who is Stuart Skinner? That's a really good question. He's an is he, who? Yeah, he's not exactly a household name outside of Alberta yet, but he's a local product. He's from Edmonton, and he's came in. He's played his skates off. So far, I mean, he's got a. I want to say it's a 915 save percentage. If I looked, it's right around there. And I think that if everyone thought that Campbell was going to be a 915 overall, they would have said, "Great success! Look at the signing; it's wonderful." But Skinner, I think, is an 800,000 or $750,000 dollar cap hit right now for Edmonton. So he's only got less than 40 career games, but he's played, probably two dozen this year so far. And he's really done well. So he saved what probably is a 10 or 11 win season without him, and made it, at least passable so far. So thumbs up to Stuart Skinner, and he's got a 3-year extension now, going into next year. So if the Campbell debacle continues, I think it's going to be Stuart's ball.
Well, to jump off of that, I'm curious, do you have any theories as to what's gone wrong for Campbell? Is there anything that folks around Edmonton are talking about as potentially what's his deal?
Well, it's funny. If you talk to enough Maple Leaf fans, they'll tell you that they saw it coming. And it hasn't been, since 2022, it really hasn't been great sales for Jack Campbell. He's kind of burst on the scene, and he had some really good numbers, and he had some quality starts. And I don't really, I'm going to catch heat for this, but I don't really fault Ken Holland for going big on Campbell as much as I would say him making the Duncan Keith trade or other moves that especially in the last offseason, which were just cap eaters, so to speak. I give him credit for finally going out and getting his guy, so some conviction there, and it took him 3 years to do it, but he did what he did. It just really hasn't worked out in any way, shape, or form. Not yet, at
Well,
least.
I'm sorry, I spoke over you. What'd you say?
No, I just said it hasn't yet, at least. So it
Right,
just
right.
hasn't.
He could still bounce back. He was an effective backup in LA, and he could be an effective backup if Stuart Skinner takes the reins. But we'll see. We'll see.
But a $5 million backup is going to be tough
Right,
for the
right.
next 4 years.
That's a real problem. That's a real
Yeah,
problem. You have to sort that one out, Ken Holland. But on the plus side, you have Connor McDavid, which Jacob, you had a question about Connor. He's
I mean,
pretty
I
good.
figured. So I figured that we'd be remiss if we didn't ask a question about the best player on the planet and bring you on. And the big thing with him this year is obviously the goal scoring is, he's always been a great goal scorer, but like best goal scorer in the league now. And his right now he's currently on pace for 67 goals this year. So what do you think, over or under that total for McDavid?
Oh boy, you never count, like Tom Brady, you never really count out touchdown Tom. And with Connor McDavid, it's like, I mean, oh my gosh, there's so much you can say about Connor McDavid. I mistakenly thought of him as a pass first kind of only player, because he's just electric with the puck. But 67 goals, I think, geez, I think I had him
Such a
for
big
around,
number.
it's a wonderful number, but I think I had him for around 45 in our write up of him, and he's going to smash that. I don't want to doubt him, but 67 is just so many. If he hits 60, that's just going to be a wild number. So yeah, I think 60 is. I like the number 60 more than I've ever liked it, which would be 15 or 16 higher than where I predicted him in the preview. But 67, I mean, if there's any player that can do it, it'll be him. I just think it's a high mountain.
Yeah, I mean, it's been incredible to watch him this year. That like last year you watch him and you're just like, man, how can like a hockey player get better than this? And David this year is like, yeah, let me show you.
It's outrageous, and it's, we're just so blessed to be able to see him night in and night out. And he'll have a 2 or a 3 point night, and it's like, yeah, he did all right. And it's, oh, is that all? Just 2 points? Well, yeah, he had a goal and assist, and one was on the power play, so is it really a goal? But yeah, it's incredible. And every time, you'd figure at his age he would have peaked, and he's just one of those players where you're not sure if he's hit the top of the mountain yet, which is awesome and frightening all in one.
Yeah, it's like this time next year we're going to be asking you over or under like 80 goals for him.
You laugh, but you never really know. It's
that's about the level of progress he's had this year.
It's outrageous.
Sure is. Well, another version of outrageous is guys who don't stick in the lineup in a way that you expect. And Jackie, you had a question about Ryan Murray, who I think is an example of that.
I do have a two-part question. I don't want to waste my whole question on Ryan Murray, but
okay.
I've like, what happened to him? Like, I know he's had the injury troubles that he had them with us. Was he healthy scratched at all? Was he just nursing this injury before they put him on IR? Like, I've even tried to look it up, and nobody out there really talks about Ryan Murray, which is understandable. But as somebody who was with us on our cup run last year, it just left me curious. If you could just kind of explain just what happened to him, I guess.
Sure. As long as I follow the Oilers, they've kind of been a little bit cloaked, you know, under wraps about injuries. Mm-hmm. And
we know Murray, that well.
General soreness. nasal decongestant. But with Ryan Murray, he played about a dozen games, and he was brought in to be like a third defenseman kind of guy, and that position has been sort of a popcorn popper because you've had guys like Philip Broberg and Marcus Niederlainen has been in there. And when Ryan Murray, you know, kind of had a hold on it for a little while, at worst he was a seventh defenseman, but he's been out now for, geez, it seems like a couple of months now, and it's just they put him on IR because of his back, and that's all you're really going to get. If you do any, you know, sort of digging and coming in on, you know, hey, it's his back injury, it's recurring. Oh, okay, so he'll be on IR. For how long? Well, nobody really kind of knows. Maybe we'll see him in March. I don't know. Maybe if they trade Philip Broberg to Arizona for Jacob Chychrun. Yeah, right. you might see more of him. I don't know. But your guess is as good as mine right now. Nobody really knows when, if, how. You know, it's like Slater Cuckoo. He was out, he was in, he was out for a while, and then you didn't really hear about him, and then, you know, he's going, you know, he's doing his thing right now where he's getting better, but nobody really knows a whole lot, so your guess is as good as mine as far as that goes.
Okay, all right, well, that does explain it for sure. My other question was just how the Oilers approach to integrating youth has it changed at all this year? Or because that's something that I've noticed as an outsider, like you just never saw them giving Tyler Benson a chance. Like, are they giving Holloway a real chance, or what about Broberg? And I actually noticed that Stuart Skinner was a good goaltender last year. And I feel like if they had taken him more serious last year, maybe the Jack Campbell thing wouldn't have happened. It's like, it was kind of clear that Skinner had something at that point, mm-hmm. and I just feel like they just sort of ignored it. So that's just kind of my overall general question, is their approach to you integrating youth changed at all?
No. And bluntly, no. I think Jay Woodcroft is head coach. Last year when he was kind of thrust into it, was a little bit more progressive, and he kind of went a little bit off the grid. He's running a lot of 11 sevens, where there's seven defensemen to kind of spell a few of them a little bit more. And we might have seen a little bit more flexibility. But it hasn't been all peaches and cream for Woodcroft this year. And I don't know if that's just, you know, him, his resilience to go up and, you know, give Dylan Holloway more than 9 minutes a night, because that's where he's at right now. And they're putting him on the fourth line often. And I don't know how much magic you're going to make with guys like Devin Shore. So is it any better? Have they gotten any more progressive? Maybe a little bit, but that's only because Stuart Skinner's been kind of carrying the bag right now for the team in net. They were going to play Campbell probably 55 games this year if he took off. You've seen it's not great. And with Skinner, I think they're just playing him out of necessity right now. I don't think he's got two dozen games at this point if he's not just, you know, miles and miles better than Campbell right now. And I think that, you know, with guys like Broberg and Niederlainen, I think they're using them out of necessity more than them wanting to. Ken Holland's always been a guy who wants to percolate the young players. If you've seen him in Detroit, he dies down, you know, for 5 years before they crack into the big leagues. And I think that if he had his way and things were going just so right, that'd be more of the same. But right now, youth is being served in the form of goaltending, and, you know, not a whole heck of a lot. You'd like to see a little bit more elsewhere, but 9 minutes a night for Holloway. And I think he should be up higher in the lineup, and I think he should probably. Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe that'll earn him a few more minutes.
Holloway's actually one of my personal favorites. I do like him a lot. So I would like to see him do well, for sure.
Behind Evander Kane, behind Zach Hyman, and I think they really like Warren Fogle a whole bunch in Edmonton. So right there, that'll put him on the fourth line when Evander Kane comes back, for sure. It's frustrating for, you know, through my eyes, because I think that you play talent with talent. And if you want Holloway to be on the team for 8 to 10 to 12 years, I think you should start throwing him with some big fish.
I agree. Yeah,
me too. As anybody who's been listening to the show knows, I grew up in Wisconsin. I love the Badgers, and he was a Badger. He was a great player. It sucks to see him kind of getting that short end of the stick on the fourth line. For me, it seems so strange that he's even on the NHL club right now. When I mean, we see it with the Avalanche too, where good young players will get stuck on the fourth line and then back to the AHL and then back to the fourth line and then back to the AHL. And it's like, what are we really doing for these guys? What do you think? Do you think he would benefit from being in the AHL?
As opposed to playing 9 minutes on a fourth line with Devin Shore? Yes.
Yeah.
But I think he's an NHL player, and it's difficult to say because I don't think that the Oilers play necessarily their best lineup night in and night out. And, you know, Holloway's had some rookie mistakes, and, you know, he's dished the puck off, you know, just blindly to, you know, the opposition. And, you know, that's going to happen with a young player, no matter if you're forward or defenseman. But yeah, I mean, right now I think that him playing is the best thing. Is he going to learn things from the big club that he wouldn't learn in the AHL? Yeah, perhaps. Now, again, everybody wants things to be instantaneous, and we want, you know, him to be successful immediately, and we want him to play 18 minutes a night. And I understand that's not going to happen right out of the box. I get that. But I think he's, you know, they're looking at more of the intangibles, and they're looking at more of, okay, he's learning how to be a professional on the fourth line at 9 minutes. And that's very frustrating from a fan who wants to see him score 20 goals this year. And I think that he'd be benefited by playing more, but, you know, if he's in the AHL, I think he's clearly at or better than all of that competition at this time. So is he going to learn anything in the AHL? You know, maybe he'll score some more goals, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Okay, well, good point. I hope all the best for him. Go Badgers. I'm curious, for the Oilers as a whole, you know, obviously last season they made the playoffs, ended up taking on the Avalanche in the final. How do you feel about this year's team compared to last year's?
It's frustrating. It's very frustrating because they were expected to be a good team, and Holland got his goaltender. And, you know, you expected it all to kind of come together, and, you know, the moons would align and the Oilers would take off and, you know, at least be near the top of the Pacific. However, things, as you have noticed, don't really necessarily all the way go according to plan. And it's frustrating because they're teetering right at that second wild card position. This is a team with a guy who could score 150 points this season. And Draisaitl's going to easily, you know, kick 100. And my God, what are we doing? What is going on? You know, this team should be everywhere right now in my mind, but they haven't. And you look at the playoffs, and McDavid was scoring 2 points a game. He ended up with 33 points in the 16 games that they played. And if that happens, you can't count him out ever. But I don't think that's planning on your nuclear players to go nuclear every game isn't necessarily a great plan. And, you know, if he goes nuclear, then the sky's the limit. They could get in, you know, with 96 points and go to the finals. I just don't think that that's necessarily the best plan. And the Oilers are frustrating on defense right now. They're one of the worst penalty kills in the league. And goaltending is a 24-year-old guy named Stuart Skinner. It's got what, 40 NHL games. So, I mean, come on. Like, it's not a recipe for success on paper. It makes for a great style movie script, but you don't necessarily win championships in Hollywood.
Yeah,
that's
and
true.
Jeff, just to jump in, Adrian, the producer here, thanks for coming on and talking with me and arranging all this. Just to kind of talk on something that I'm intrigued with, isn't it interesting that it's obvious how quickly things can change, and for various reasons in the NHL, as this is a rematch of the Western Conference Final, but the outlook for the both teams, including the defending champ Colorado Avalanche, has pretty greatly shifted. From your point of view, why do you think that is for the Edmonton Oilers? Do you think it was because they were maybe not as good as they appeared last year, or kind of what's going on there?
Well, clearly they're not as good as they were last year. And a lot of, you know, kind of good juju, I'll say, kind of happened last year. Mike Smith played pretty good, and he, you know, his play has always been a toss up, and he has injury history in goal. And like I say, McDavid went nuclear in the playoffs. You know, he had 33 points in 16 games, which is more than 2 points a game, which is outrageous. You know, the defense came together a little bit better last year. I don't necessarily think that they were much better on paper, but you know, anything can happen in four games. Anything can happen in a series. You know, it's just, I don't think that they're much worse. I just think that their goaltending with Jack Campbell has just been very poor. And the defense and penalty kill right now, all their warts are showing. Cody Ceci can't be on a first pair. Let's go, boys. You know, like gentlemen, you can't have Cody Ceci doing the big line minutes. And Darnell Nurse is a good player, but he's a top four defenseman. And, you know, the flaws in his game are apparent when he plays big time minutes. So the Oilers need an injection on defense, and they would probably do better to have another goaltender that isn't Jack Campbell right now. And until those things change, they're going to depend on, you know, McDavid and Drysdale to go nuclear. And if they do, look out, you know, there'll be a lot of fire wagon hockey. But if they don't, you know, I think you're looking at a slightly better than average team.
Well, great. Well, that'll make sense. We do have this matchup between the two teams tomorrow night. So my last question for you today, Jeff, is what do the Avalanche have to do to beat the Oilers tomorrow?
Well, they have, you know what, if the Oilers take penalties, they're going to have a bad time. The Oilers are going to have a bad time. They have a 73% penalty kill-ish success rate last I looked 2 or 3 days ago. And if you're, you know, the Avalanche have firepower. And if you're allowing a goal every 2 or 3 power, you know, penalty kills, it's going to be a bad time. So if they get, you know, the Oilers off on their special teams, it'll be a tough night for Edmonton. Just your speedy forwards against the Nurse CC line. If they just do their thing, it could be, you know, very difficult. If Stuart Skinner holds the fort, it could be a good night for Edmonton because he, you know, he's turned away some 46, 47 save performances.
Mm-hmm.
Something you want to bet on. But if he wants to pull one out of his, you know, out of his coat pocket, that'd be great for Edmonton. But, you know, just special teams and you know, exposing the top line defense is very possible. If the Avalanche can score 4 or 5 goals, it'll be very difficult for Edmonton to win. I mean, it'll be difficult for any team to win. But
yeah,
you can't ever count out the Avalanche. They're just so good, and they have so many weapons on up front. And like I say, special teams is just it's the Achilles heel right now of the Oilers. And if, you know, thank goodness they're supposed to play Skinner, but if they don't play Skinner, it could get ugly quick.
Well, I guess we'll hope they don't play Skinner then. We have a lot of weapons on the shelf. That would help us out a lot. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. Jeff Chapman of the Copper and Blue blog. You can read his stuff at copperandblue.com, Sports Nation blog. Jeff, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you all for having me so much. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Good luck tomorrow. Thanks, Jeff. Okay.
Yeah, let's have a good clean game tomorrow night.
Yeah, let's all have some fun. Thank you all so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right. Well, that was Jeff Chapman, as we said. Thanks again to Jeff. Any takeaways from that at Oilers conversations, guys?
Well, we'll have a clean game since Nazem Kadri and Evander Kane will be going at each other's throats, at least.
Yeah. I didn't have the heart to tell him there's no way the Avs are scoring five.
I know. I didn't have the heart to think it.
Just seems like we talk about the same stuff with the Oilers every year. Like it must just feel like being purgatory, being an Oilers fan, where it's like, definitely. Well, if we just get any depth around McDavid and Draisaitl and get, you know, anybody to play defense and anybody to play goalie, like this is what it's been McDavid's entire career.
Yeah. We've had conversations.
And hearing that they're really not taking the young guys anymore serious, like that's where your depth comes from. It's like you can't go out and buy depth. Nobody has the money for that, especially when they just spent $5 million on a goalie when the guy they had that's better is making $700,000, you know, and that's where your depth comes from. And if you don't take you seriously, you're never going to have it.
100%. Looking at the Oilers stats, just their basic stats on ESPN, I'm seeing that Warren Fogle, who's one of the guys that Jeff mentioned is getting played over Dylan Holloway, is playing 12 minutes a night, has 7 points in 28 games. and I saw last night or two nights ago, the Oilers Twitter was just going after Fogle for something. I honestly don't know what I'm talking about. I don't remember what it was, but he was not playing well, I guess. And there he is getting more minutes than Holloway, who's got 5 points in his 8 minutes a night. So they're comparable players, but one's got much more upside. If I was an Oilers fan, I would want to see Holloway up in the top six, at least the top nine, but I'm not, thank God.
I'm in on the convo because I took a lot from, I thought a lot was interesting from what he had to say. Mostly like Jackie's stuff about the young guys, because and when he kept saying like you expect Draisaitl and McDavid to nuke, but that's not sustainable, right? And we know that better than any franchise. We've been, like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, Ezra, we've been top heavy, and we've been in the position where we wanted to rely on the MacKinnon, Landeskog, and Rantanen line way too much, and we know it pretty much gets you beat. I found it interesting that he identifies that they don't seem to really be caring too much about the young guys. Jackie, why do you think that is? Is it the GM? Is that just his approach?
The Oilers in general, I think, are a very old school franchise. I think a lot of them tend to operate this way. And there are old school tendencies among all NHL, but I think in particular, Edmonton is one of the most old school. And Holland obviously doesn't help. I thought it was interesting when our guest mentioned, like, wanting to keep guys in the AHL for 5 years. Like, you just can't do that. Their waiver exemption and their ELC is up after 3 years. How can you keep someone in the AHL for five? Like, at that point, they just have no value. If they're still around, they're just career minor league players. So I think that's working against them, and they just really seem to prioritize more than most organizations these old school experienced grinders, I guess you could say. And so I don't really know if there's a way out of that. Like, you can tell from their media just how old school they are. They push these narratives like, oh, you need to be in the AHL forever, you need to respect these guys that have been around the block and blah blah blah. And I think it's just, it's a feedback loop. It just self-fulfills, and it's going to be really hard for them to break out of it, I think, to adopt some more modern thinking.
And I think, like, on that point, we saw sort of the good version of bringing in veteran depth grinders type players in Colorado last year with Darren Helm and Andrew Cagliano, who are technically veteran depth, gritty forwards, but also they fit the identity of the fast, skilled young team that Colorado had. So it's using those players in a smart way that I feel like Edmonton, and specifically Ken Holland, even back when he was in Detroit at the end there, the cap era, Ken Holland, I guess, really missed, where just having older guys who know what to do, doesn't matter if you can't get up and down the ice fast enough to play in the modern NHL. So it'd be rough to be an Oilers fan, but again, fortunately I am not.
They wouldn't be my second choice.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
No.
I'm just going to throw you the live poll results.
Yes, thank you.
So,
okay.
Should we be tanking for Connor Bedard, young man who looked excellent in the World Juniors? 40% yes out of 83 votes. 60% no.
Out there.
Now
40% I mean, yes.
That's interesting.
Wow.
Are all those votes ironic or what?
I don't know.
Is that really the thought process?
Yeah, here's the comment.
It's probably like half ironic and then half like pure rage.
Yep. First comment, LOL. Second comment, slow off day, question mark. Third comment is one stick figure slapping another stick figure in the face. So
yeah. That's
great. Oh, good job, commenters.
I was reading those comments when the tweet first came out, and I was trying to hold back my laughter. So that was funny. Also, while we're talking about World Juniors, shout out Sean Behrens. The Avalanche, the future Avalanche defender, hopefully, maybe. We'll see how that goes with the trade deadline and whatnot. But he's a bronze medalist.
Yeah, and Jackie, you wrote a piece about that.
Yeah. It just was published right before we started recording this. And he had a good tournament. He played a lot. I think he just scored 3 points, a goal and 2 assists. But he had a big role. He was alternate captain. Luke Hughes, of course, carried the offensive load there for the back end. But I think it was a pretty successful tournament for Behrens. Couple that with maybe a little bit less production at DU, I think it was good for him to have a good little moment here. But I guess maybe his eventual ceiling when it comes to offensive numbers might be questioned a little bit. And he is a little bit undersized and not the best skater ever. So not really sure exactly where to peg him as far as, is he really going to play on the Avs and where, but you don't need to worry about that right now. It's just, I think the next question on the horizon for him is he going to sign this spring or is he going to go back to school for another year? And I see it really as 50-50 right now. It might depend how his season finishes, but I could see an argument either way for either of those paths, but definitely kudos to him. He was our only prospect in this tournament. So to walk away with a medal and in a big role is pretty cool. So we're happy for Sean Behrens and Team USA.
Definitely. And I've seen a lot of comparisons for him to like a Torrey Krug or something. But I watched these WJC games and it what jumped out to me was just his like smarts and positioning. He always seems to be... He reminded me more of Devin Taves, obviously a different size profile, different player, but Taves in the way that he is always in the right spot and generally making the right decision, although last night was questionable, generally making the right decision in the right spot, just making these solid little plays that don't necessarily show up on the score sheet, but really make a big impact on the game. That's what I was seeing from Behrens. I don't mean to say that his ceiling is a number one pairing defenseman on a Stanley Cup champion, but I just, that style of defender seemed more to fit him than what I've been hearing before from other folks about him, you know, being similar to a Torrey Krug. I'm curious if anybody else had thoughts on that.
I think he fits the Avs very well. Sometimes he kind of reminds me of Makar in a way, just the way that he moves along the blue line. Like it almost seems like he's studying Makar, which, you know, is probably a good idea for any defenseman out there really. But so I think he can take a little bit from some of the Avalanche defensemen and maybe they are sort of steering him in that direction as well from the development team. So I wouldn't say that I had that exact thought, but I can see where you're coming from with that because he's not really going to be like a pure offensive guy. Like he could settle into more of a Girard type defenseman. I know that's a 4-letter word around these parts.
No, that's a successful top 4 defenseman.
But exactly.
Yeah.
Since he's come into the league.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he's that type of player, maybe in a little different style, I think that could work for the team as well.
Yeah, and just to branch off a little bit on when we were talking about the trade deadline and how Behrens or any prospect really might figure into that, we are, and you guys are just going to hear about this now, as well as the the world. But I'm going to be doing pretty much a day-long live broadcast on trade deadline day. And oh. I'm going to ask that you four drop in whenever is convenient for you on that day. So
sure.
That way we can focus, you know, our news specifically on who the Avs are kind of working with. Obviously, there might not be a lot to talk about. But in the meantime, we can definitely do some speculations and talk about some of the chips that are leaving the trade deadline board. So producer Ado says, come to Mile High Hockey's podcast and live stream on trade deadline day so you get all the Avs stuff first.
And I absolutely hate the trade deadline. So if you want some entertainment, it might come from me. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it seems like everybody makes either, like the Avs did wonderful at the deadline last year, but typically that's not the case for most teams in the league. So I'm right there with you, Jackie. I'm sure we're going to be going, oh God, what did we just do?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get into it more as the deadline approaches, but I am kind of on the side of like, let's let the guys who come back from injury be our additions and not sacrifice the future too much more this season. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm excited to get into it, and doing a live stream that day sounds really fun.
Yeah, and we'll know exactly how management feels about that 2C position on deadline day, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, if they bring in Bo Horvat, we know they didn't like something. we know they're short-sighted all of a sudden. Guys, this is really fun. Thank you for being here and letting me host an episode. I really enjoyed it, and I hope if you're listening at home, you did too. You can like this this podcast on YouTube. That would help us a lot. Subscribe to it there. Subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you use. If you're hearing this on a podcast platform, you probably already did that, but you haven't told your friends yet, so do that. It really helps us out. We're trying to make sure everybody knows that we have this podcast, so help us out, folks. Adrian, Jacob, Evan, and Jackie, I'm Ezra, and this was the Mile High Hockey Lab. We'll catch you next week, folks.
Mile High Hockey Lab.